All right, everybody. Today we have the badass Owen Gray on the show. How's it going, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. How are you holding up? The world's kind of crazy these days. How's everything going?
I'm holding up pretty well. It's been a big year, I think, for everybody. And I'm learning to adapt, and it's been an interesting ride, but I really can't complain. I'm pretty happy with where I am, among considering.
Yeah, exactly. All things fucking considered. Have you been staying? I mean, well, obviously there was the pandemic and it kind of shut everything down. Have you gone back to shooting yet, or are you kind of still kind of holding out?
I literally just kind of started shooting a little bit and at a very slow, careful pace. So yeah, it's interesting talking to other performers, because I get the sense that some people are shooting all of the time and they seem to be doing fine. And you know, just with the relationships, like proximity I have to other people in my life, I am taking it slow. I mean, not just, you know, for myself, but also for people that I come into contact with and live with. So, but yeah, thankfully I don't have the urgency to shoot right away or shoot a lot.
Yeah. I've heard the same thing. You know, that surprisingly there was, it took a little bit because people were, well, some were quiet. Here's the thing. Some were quiet about it and others just didn't give a shit. And I'm talking like big names.
We've just been in this area of such uncertainty that there's certainly probably ways we could have gone about it, or at least, you know, certain performers could have, that they could have been safe. But there's been so much unknown. So even through summer when people started shooting, I was kind of just like, I'm going to see how it goes for them for a while. And then like, maybe I'll change my mind, and then not really any updates or news. And then I'm like, maybe I'll just wait a little bit longer, see if anything changes. And then like, no new info or anything changes. So that's why I've kind of eventually, I'm like, okay, I'm getting to that point where I kind of, it's hard because, you know, like I think a lot of people like yourself, you know, you run a company, you have a schedule, you have deadlines and a certain amount that you're used to producing. And it's really scary and hard to let that momentum just stop.
Yeah.
You know, because you're like, I don't know how long this is going to last if I just don't shoot anymore.
Yeah, like how long do I have before this has to, it becomes imminent and like I no longer have a choice. I have to start doing something.
Yeah, which is kind of the worst position to be in. You
desperation.
Know? So it's, yeah, you know, I would much rather pick and choose, and also because like things could obviously get worse again.
Well, they're so spiking right now. Like I was looking at it, and I think I think people have gotten to where the weather's getting nicer. It's not as hot. I know specifically for me because it's finally gotten out of the hundreds. So I'm like, it's so nice. But then there's the it's still here, and people have kind of, I think it's gone on for so long. People are like, okay, whatever, and they're kind of, you know, trying to figure out ways of not doing it because it's frustrating. And it makes me nervous because there was Labor Day, which all of the things were happening. All the people were like, hey, it's kind of nicer, so we should go do it. And again, here in Vegas, like you see these numbers spiking again, but it's all over the country. The weird thing I was looking at this morning, the weirdest thing is like North Dakota and South Dakota are like, their numbers are through the fucking roof. And they, for the longest time, had nothing. They were like one of the last ones to get it. And suddenly, it's gone to hell. And it's all because, you know, the governor does this here and the governor over there does something different. So instead of this being a health crisis, it's become a political move. And I think that's where our problems are coming from.
Yeah. Well, there hasn't been like a unifying voice in all of this or a plan of action. And so that's, you know, I think that's why each state or even county is acting totally independently, which kind of makes everything more erratic, because there might be shutdowns, but then in other areas there's not. So there's not like a consensus of like everybody shut down now.
Right.
So that's, I think, where a lot of the problems are.
So are you back to shooting normal stuff? Like because at Kink, we're, as far as I know, we're the last company that's still on holdout. Like we're not back to full production yet. We're doing remote stuff. You know, like I said, before we got started with the podcast, like I sit here, like I have Skype dates or like, you know, like Zoom meetings, and I direct from back here, and I'm like, hey, let's change the camera angle, or hey, this is what we're looking for, and kind of walking them through it and getting the lighting right, which is weird as hell. Cause I'm just like,
yeah,
if I were just there, I could do this.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have a similar, like, I mean, even when I first started performing, I remember being on set, and I just came from this background of like working on a team and producing projects, and like, I'd be like, oh, can I help with that light? Can I like move this box for you? Can I, and people would be like, you're a talent today. Just chill. And
right.
You know, when you're used to being a director and rigger and like doing all these other things, it's hard to just like sit back and be like, okay, I'm just going to tell you while I sit here.
Yeah. I joke with everyone, cause I've been doing a lot of POV stuff because it's easy, because I started thinking like, what can I do remotely that's not going to be super challenging for people who aren't maybe into bondage or BDSM, but are willing to. So I'm like, POV is easy. It's not easy. It's not as easy as it, you know, it's everything that we do is difficult, but POV seemed to be the easiest of all. Yeah. And inadvertently I've turned myself into a cuck. Like now I sit around and watch all my friends fuck and just have to sit here and stare at them.
Yeah. Good job, guys. That's really hot.
Yeah. Thanks for making me sit here with blue balls, you fuckers. So, let's talk about your career. Cause I've known you from the very, what I knew of is like the very beginning of your porn career, where you were more of a, at least when I, again, this is like, I had just started working at Kink and I was running the upper floor, and you started off as a guest coming to the upper floor, right?
Yeah. That's what, I mean, that probably most people don't know, but like, yeah, before I ever performed, it was actually like an old roommate of mine basically invited me to go to like First Public Disgrace and be like, hey, why don't you come along? And I would go with a few friends. And then we ended up going to the upper floor and checking that out. And I totally remember seeing you up there, and you'd be directing and performing. And, you know, I'd see like, I think maybe my like second time on the upper floor, like Skin Diamond was there. And I was like, oh my God, Skin Diamond. and that was kind of my first like touch into the porn world of any kind, and actually like putting names to faces. Well, I was familiar with plenty of performers. I wasn't like, I didn't know the names or kind of their how relevant they were, or right, how long they've been in the industry. Yeah.
So you kind of came in as someone who was like a kind of, were you like a big porn watcher, or are you kind of?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I watched plenty of a variety. I've always kind of just like not really been focused on any specific type of porn, but I definitely consume plenty of porn from a younger age. So yeah, there was totally like when I first started, there was totally performers that like, you know, I had watched in scenes and then eventually got to shoot with, which was like a really crazy mind fuck in a way. But yeah, I mean, I basically applied on Kink's website, and Mickey Maude interviewed me when he was working in the talent department. And then like 2 weeks later, I think like Bobby Sanchez emailed me and was like, hey, do you want to be like guy number three on a Public Disgrace? And I was like, yeah, of course. That'd be awesome. And even that, like my first scene, it was with Beretta James, who you probably remember. Mm-hmm. And I remember I had been on the upper floor when she had performed. And so even for my first scene, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I got to work with that person that I just saw. Because it was all just so new. But it was not like I really didn't have many expectations. And that, like, I was familiar with Public Disgrace. And it was kind of just this like, this could be an interesting experience. Like, I wonder what it's going to be like.
Right.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, you know, well, because Princess Donna was directing Public Disgrace. And then immediately after my first scene, she was like, hey, I'd like to book you for some gangbangs. And then my second scene was a gangbang. And that's when I first kind of officially met you, because you came down and you taught us all how to waterboard that girl.
That's right. I do remember that. Because then Donna was, because Donna was the one that was like, well, we're not going to mess her makeup. Do me.
Yeah, she was a test subject, basically. Yeah, and that was kind of ridiculous because it was like my second scene ever. And then it was Ramon, Tony Rebus, James Dean, and Carlo Carrera. So it was these four, like, I'm going to be the man and get in there type guys. And I was like, hey guys, I'll just jump in whenever you want to let me.
Anytime you guys need to get a glass of water, I'll step in and take over for a little bit.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Holy shit. So that was your first gangbang.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the girl. That's the crazy part. I remember the setting and everyone. I remember seeing you, but I do not remember who the fuck the girl was.
She was one of those girls where it was like a gangbang was her fantasy. Like doing porn was not her plan. I think that was maybe, if not her first, one of her first scenes, because I remember like she had never had sex in bondage, she had never done a DP, and she'd never been waterboarded, and we did like all of that in her first scene. Oh. But I don't know if she really, because there was definitely gangbangs I did where like it was the girl's first and only scene because they were just like, this is my fantasy and I really wanted this. Yeah,
Donna was good about that. She always had a way of finding people. I mean, Donna was amazing anyway. Yeah. And she had a way that people would just be like, hey, yeah, I've never performed in my life. And always attractive, always down. And then was like my first scene ever. Like most people like in the regular world, the non-performing kind of thing, a threesome is like, oh man, I had this one time, that one thing back in whenever. And this person's like, I'm going to come out and my first experience ever is going to be taking on five professional dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is pretty nuts. I mean, I've heard plenty of people talk about like non-performers in their real life being like, oh, I really want to do a gangbang and I'm just trying to coordinate like five guys. And
right.
I was always like, good luck.
We can barely do it in a professional setting and you're trying to do it in a personal setting.
It's just such a like thing of coordination, you know, both just making the date happen and, you know, like it's like musical chairs of porn. It's very technical. So yeah,
I mean, I remember in my 20s, long time ago, I was in a band with a dude and he was like, dude, this girl's down and she wants to do this thing. And I was like, all right, fuck it, let's go. And we went back and we started and dude was, it wasn't working as it all, it happens to all of us. And it was one, and that alone is something that people forget. Like you, it's one guy and one girl alone. There's going to be a possibility for that. Then you throw in someone else and then maybe four more. Like that's just such a, I don't know. I didn't know that people actually did gangbangs in their personal life. Yeah. It was just porn.
Yeah. I mean, nerves can get the best of anybody. I've seen it with all kinds of people at times and, you know, it doesn't mean that it can never happen, but just, you know, you can't let that hold you back because sometimes you come back and you can make those things happen and it'll be great for everybody. But
yeah, I mean, that's, I've always been sympathetic because of someone who has a penis that I've always been like, hey, I get it. Take a few minutes. I actually was able to talk a guy down, if you will. Like he was like, I just don't know. I don't know. I was like, dude, go outside, have a smoke, do blah, 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 blah. And just take a break. And if it doesn't work, then you come back. No harm, no foul. We're done. We'll reschedule and do it another time. And just pulling all of the stress back. And I did that anytime there was ever a problem. But this time he came back in. He's like, I'm ready. We got to go. And I was like, action, bitches. Like, it's like, let's go now.
Yeah. I mean, I've, again, you know, after over 8+ years of performing, I've seen so many different things. And it's like, people can just get in their head so much. And then when they get in their head, it's like that stress and anxiety just amplifies even more. And so that's why, same thing, you know, I would just tell people like, let's just like sit down and like hang out for 5 minutes and chill and just like bring all the energy down. And then, you know, be like, okay, start naturally. And then let's go from there. And it tends to work.
How is it with now? Because you said, excuse me, that, 8 years ago you started doing this and, you know, and you were kind of like this guy who was like watching and an extra and then slowly started to where you are now. Like you aren't just a guy who's performing, like you are fucking Owen Gray. You are. And I know you're very humble about that, so I don't mean to like make you uncomfortable, but
nah.
You, I mean, you've got, Sorry, that's a chocolate chip kicking up on me. You've got your site. What's the name of your site again?
Deeplush.com.
Deeplush. Yeah. So you've got Deeplush. So you aren't just performing. You're performing. You have a massive fucking brand. You have one of the craziest followings. Like people, like I was shared with you, like that thing that's on TikTok. Like people, yeah. Everyone knows who the hell Owen Gray is in an 8-year span. And yet you kind of, you've stayed so like humble and modest, and you don't have like this grandiose kind of like, look at me. Like you basically, what I'm saying is you're the same person, and in 8 years you went from an extra to being, to, from what I can see, probably one of the biggest heavy hitters in the fucking industry.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a crazy experience, and one that I never ever could have imagined it would be where it is. I mean, I honestly don't, I think it was even after like a year of performing in porn that I was then like, maybe I could do this for a while and like make it a thing. You know, it really took time for me to consider it as like a long-term option. And now, you know, I do think just kind of the longevity of me being in porn has helped my name be relevant. But yeah, I think just in my own personal life, like I was, even, you know, before porn and everything, like I was never like the man, and I was never like, I grew up with my older brother, who's the most awesome person I always looked up to. And he was like most popular person in high school, like killer athlete, like everybody loved him, you know, and I was kind of always looking up to him and admiring him. And, you know, going into porn, I've always been, even when, you know, when I first started, some of like the biggest male performers were like younger than me. I was like, and so I was always kind of just like, wow, like, I don't even know how you get to that level or what it takes. And, you know, I think I always kind of, no matter what the context of my life is, I think there's always more to learn. We can always do better. We can always grow and learn, and just, you know, there's never a point where I feel as though, you know, I'm like doing that, I'm just like untouchable in that way. And I think, you know, with every, you know, again, with every part of life, there's always things that I'm curious about. There's always like relationships that I want to do better with. And in porn, it's like, I don't know. It's, I constantly try to break down the facade that other people kind of project onto me, because I want people to see what I do, not as like, is something that they elevate or put on a pedestal,
right?
But something that they can watch and be like, wow, I like what you're doing, and I want to be able to do that, and I want to have those experiences. And I try to approach what I produce in that way, where it's just like if you want to have this type of sex, like talk to your partner, create that communication, and like find those opportunities where you can have those experiences. And that's kind of why I like, you know, a lot of like what I produce, you know, I've definitely learned a lot about like lighting and cameras and all that technical stuff. That's super frustrating. but at the same time, like what I produce in a way is very like underproduced in other ways, because I like the kind of no frills representation of sex, where, you know, like one of my most commented on moments of any scene I've done, I was like this threesome with Aaron Smallhands and Kristen Scott, and we're having a threesome, it's really hot, and we're like changing positions, and Aaron accidentally like knees her in the chin, and it kind of like knocks her head, and he like stops, he's like, oh, I'm sorry, like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. And like people love that like 5 seconds,
and so because it's genuine.
Because, yeah, it's genuine. And it shows, like, this thing where it's, like sex can be, like, weird or sloppy or funny or, like, you can make mistakes and keep going, you know, and having a good time. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't also, like, appreciate very produced stuff. And, like, you know, I've talked with so many other performers, like, about what you produce. And you know, I'm like, that's kind of why I did so much BDSM with Kink over the years, like, hundreds of scenes, and while I still kind of have this connection to the BDSM world, it's almost like I don't feel that I could produce something to a quality that I feel so confident in,
right?
That's why it's like, if I'm going to do this, I want like JP to do it. Cause I feel like 110% about what I'm doing.
Right.
But yeah, as far as like my name, it's strange because, you know, I was never like the popular guy ever. but everybody is so tremendously sweet and appreciative of the people I meet and the people that reach out to me online that, you know, like there's no benefit to me like letting that get to my head. There's no, you know, I wouldn't be here without them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Like I, you know, when I have people compliment me or say things like, and it's, I'm getting better, but I've always been the kind of like, cause I've never done well with being complimented. And so having it I think it keeps me humble and out on everything that I've ever done. So, and I think that's like what this, and that's why I've noticed it in you is cause I'm like, you have someone who's tremendously successful at what they do and has this amazing product and yet is super, super grounded because there are people who, and you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but they're so braggadocious and they're look at me and I'm so this and I'm so that. And you've, like I said, you've always kind of stayed. So that's why it's like, I appreciate it. And plus the quality of the stuff you do is like you said, it's done in a way that it's got a uniqueness about it, the way it's shot, the way the lighting looks, the camera. Cause if I'm not mistaken, you still do all the camera work, right?
Yeah. I kind of have stubbornly done everything because I mean, especially starting out, I mean, I didn't really have the budget or resources to hire anybody. And so part of me was just like, I'm going to figure out how to do as much of this as I can so that I don't have to kind of worry about hiring other people or being different than I want or, you know, and that's why, like, even now, everything that I make, I'm always kind of, I'm the most critical of what I make because I always can find room for improvement.
And you should be.
Yeah, and I think that's natural. I think that's how you, like, just naturally grow and learn more. But yeah, I mean, I've always shot everything myself, and it's part of the, it's kind of this silly juggle that I do. But it you know, in a way, I've taught myself because I know my angles, I know my lighting, and even though I'm performing, I'm always, like, you know, I always have this, like, my thoughts in this other place of like positioning my body and opening up or like in the lighting and little things like that.
I mean, I still have nightmares, man. When I was, when I first started back in LA with my old company, there were a couple times that my boss would come in and he was like, when it was just him and I, this is before we got bigger and it was, you know, there were more of us that I could fall back on. And he would be like, hey, you know what, dude, something came up, I gotta go. And I was like, but I gotta shoot and I'm on camera. And he was like, I gotta go do it. And I was like, which has built me into being who I am. It's shown me, like you had to go and learn how to do it because there was no alternative. But to this day, I still have nightmares about, and I'm not nightmares like, you know, big scary monster, but more of like those like, oh shit, wake up moments where I'm dreaming about production and there's no one there but me and the model and I keep forgetting to move the fucking camera and I somehow put me in between the model and the camera so there's nothing but like my ass dressed in black. I just started my 17th year in this fucking industry and I'm still like fucking and I haven't shot my own content for, well, that's a lie. Since this has been going on, I've been shooting my own shit, but it's just weird. It's like, it's one of those things I think, but again, I think it's like with you, the same thing is like you are doing it all on your own because you
I didn't have a choice.
And now you've figured out that it's something that you have, you've taken full control over it. You've maintained control over it and you've been consistent with the way it looks. And like I said, it definitely to me has a feel about it. The way, like I said, the way it's shot, the angles, the lighting, like everything about it kind of stands off different and makes it kind of pop. And it's, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't have the same overproduced, the making the donuts. It doesn't have that feel. It feels like there's more going into it.
Yeah. I mean, I do watch tons of other porn, even just from a creator perspective of like what is typical in porn. And frankly, like I think a lot of how I shoot things is based on the comments that I get and what people respond to and what people notice and react. Like, I would be more than happy to literally just be one of those POV guys and to like not be on, like not be me,
right?
Just be like a body. But you know, when I shoot scenes and it shows my face and it shows my expression and how I engage with the person that I'm shooting with, the eye contact, and people comment to be like, oh, like that level of engagement, that's what people are kind of are attracted to. And so like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll shoot most of everything like in a medium shot and kind of call it a day.
But it is. I think the only person that I know that's ever been brought or talked about in the past was like, I remember James Dean had this thing where he would like put his head to the girl and like hold the back of their head and like stare at them. And I remember that you would see the same thing. The girl's like, oh my God, if he would just look at me that way. And it's, I feel like it's the same thing. Like it's, they see how passionate you are about what you're doing. Like the whole act of it, that I think that's what has such a, I think that's what's grown your fan base. I mean, obviously you're good at everything you're doing, but I think that it's so 100% genuine and it's readable. And I think that's what people are like, fuck yeah, Owen Gray.
Well, I think so many people kind of focus on the actions of sex, like the penetration, the choking, the physical attributes. And they break it down like, well, if you can fuck like that, then like, that's what looks good and that's hot. And I try to consider at least my scenes and as a performer of like the energy of like, what is the, like, can you feel the energy that I'm focusing on them or that like I'm responding to in pleasure, and that energy comes off. It's readable. And when you show like the engagement of people having sex, then it's not just about like a hot girl with an anonymous dick kind of going in and out and, you know, and which is fine. Like I watch porn like that and lots of people enjoy that porn. But it's, you know, it's just a different product. And I've found people who like something produced slightly different. So
do you think that coming from like starting out with a BDSM background because of the care that's put into it and how important that connection is immediately, you know, like when you and I've worked together, we've shot a lot of scenes together. There's that, even with me as someone who's not on camera with them, like to do that, there has to be this connection and there has to be this like immediate, there has to be a chemistry before, mm-hmm. You know, do you think that having a BDSM background has made it easier for you to make those kind of connections? Or do you think it was more natural anyway?
I think it's a mix. I think I've brought a lot of my personal life kind of experience and education that I've done. But I think that BDSM certainly helped me learn about and put a higher focus on like boundaries and communication and just checking in, being aware of what someone's feeling. And I think I think also being in the position of like receiving pain and being, you know, like I've totally been tied up. I've totally been fucking whipped and beat to shit.
Right.
And so like, if you have, you know, like as a top, if you have a greater understanding of the things that you're making somebody else feel, then I think it gives you a lot more of a sense of like what you're giving, both from a pain and a pleasure perspective. But yeah, I would definitely owe a lot to BDSM and what I've learned from that.
Do you feel that, do you have like, I know you've got like a variety, and I feel like you kind of base your scenes similar to the way I do mine. Like you meet the model, you feel them out, and then you're like, okay, today we're going to play this way or today. So you kind of seem like you adapt your scenes to go with the model at that exact moment. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely. Because it's such a, you often don't really know quite what the dynamic is or the energy, how kind of, you know, like in BDSM, like how much someone is going to open up and kind of tap into that like connection when you're engaged on camera. And I feel as though it's sometimes, you know, it's hard to even know that until it's happening. You can't always predict that, but that's, you know, also why there's certain people that I love to shoot again and again, because whatever happens and whatever kind of a spark and that opening up that happens, kind of that kind of vulnerable place, you know, that each of us have, I think, you know, is evident, and it shows on camera. It shows it, like it's easy to read those emotions on camera. And so, you know, there's still a lot of great performers maybe that I haven't worked with or on the newer side that I would really like to work with, but it's hard when, you know, you have like 10 performers or something where you're like, I could totally just keep shooting them all the time. That'd be
great. I know that feeling all too well. You're like, but these 10 are perfect. Why do I have to go anywhere else? But you also seem to be someone, and I told my wife, I was like, you know, because if anybody by chance has never listened to me before, is also my producer. And I told her, I was like, if you hear about a new girl and you go look at her social media and Owen Gray or Mickey Maud, or at least both, and sometimes Tommy Pistol, it's usually the three of you. Like if at least one of you aren't following her, I want nothing to do with her. Cause I was like, if she hasn't caught any of their eyes, and there's something about like when people are like, oh, there's this new girl and she's got like 1200 followers and somehow you are following her or Mickey or Tommy. And I'm like, well, she's done something to catch their eye. And that's kind of where I use as a gauge to be like, all right, if they know who she is and there's something that, you know, obviously should be looking at, because you have so like this library of so many people you've worked with.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also very patient. I think when I really started getting into producing my own stuff, I was a little just like, I felt like I had to, you know, prove myself, you know, still that I could do it, and that I, you know, that I could work with so many different performers. And I definitely, I think, just tried out a lot of people that I'd never met or wasn't sure of. But I'm definitely very patient. I also don't, like, that's the thing. I shoot way less than I think most people realize. Like, even under normal times, I shoot 3 or 4 scenes a month at this point, and I almost never shoot for other companies. And I just take my time and I watch other people. Like I watch people's scenes, to like see how they perform with other people, you know. And you can't help but kind of watch people's social media and just see a little bit about what kind of people are. But I'm not really, I rarely see a new person in porn and just be like, oh, they're so hot, I have to shoot with them.
Right.
Because that's not really at least for me, that's not really the selling factor. It's like, for me, it's somebody that I think, you know, will be engaged and perform and open up to something in a video that I think kind of the people who watch my content will appreciate. So,
right. Yeah. So you seem to be really, in touch, and I'm sitting here listening to you, and it's like rings so familiar with the way I do a lot of the stuff too. Is like, you know, you see someone, you're like, holy fuck, that girl's really hot. But then it's not like you don't pounce, like you sit back and you watch, how is she acting? Does she ever shit? Because I hate to say it, but facts are facts. And there are people who show up, and it does not take long with that social media when it starts growing to where they suddenly are like, oh, and then their mouth just turns into a butthole full of, like, it just starts going. And you're like, how did you become so ugly so quickly just because someone showed you. And that, so it's, and I've unfortunately had it backfire to where I did in my younger days hire someone because she was super hot and I really want to work with her. And she showed up and I was like, I can't wait for this day to be over. Like, I really need her to be away from me. And it's, and I don't think people understand because they're, you know, they see, you know, Owen's fucking everybody and JP's working with all these different girls. And there are days, at least for me, I'm sure I've had at least a couple where you either earn, they obviously come in and do the job, but you carry the scene and you, that day, you're the one earning the money basically.
Yeah. You know, and it, you just, I don't, there's no way that I can know where people are coming from when they come to set, you know, for anybody. There's definitely even, you know, that's like the same, like when I first started porn and I was shooting with, you know, maybe somebody that I had like a big porn crush on and was super excited to shoot with. And, you know, the butterflies in my stomach. And then I got to set and we're like shooting and I'm like, this is so not what I was hoping. And you know, I don't really get my, it's kind of like a mental practice of not kind of getting my hopes up in that way anymore, but it's also just, like I can shoot with people and it can be fine, but it might not be the great scene. And, you know, I don't know what's going on in their life. I've definitely come to set where at days when something really difficult or bad was going on in my personal life. And I was maybe not the most friendly or wonderful person to work with. And you just, you know, I just don't take it personal and I just keep going, going. And,
well, you can't, I've learned that over the years, like you can't take it personal. You do the best you can. And the weird thing with my experience is I've found out that I have kink come back to me and they're like, dude, you totally have to shoot this girl again. She was so hot. The chemistry was so great. And I was like, you've lost your mind. Never. Like that was one of the most difficult days and people, but that's what I think makes us professional. That's what makes us excel the way we do is because you, no matter what, are going to make a good product and you are open-minded enough to, like you said, to know, we don't know what's going on in their life. We don't know what happened, you know, the second before they walked in, the phone call they may have had, the horrible, whatever. We don't know that. So you just have to make the best that you can and, you know, make judgment calls on if it's horrible, horrible, which I've had to do maybe twice in 17 years is to where you're like, I'm gonna need you to go home. Today is the wrong day. And I'm going to advocate for you because you clearly are too far in a bad spot.
Yeah. And I've been there, you know, I've had to tell people to go home like before scenes even start. And I don't know really what was happening, but I knew it would be better for both of us.
Right.
You know, if we didn't shoot that day.
Yeah.
But yeah, thankfully I'm, you know, like I said, being patient and kind of getting a feel for people before I ever shoot for them usually works in my favor.
Switching the subject up, I had to lean over and look at my questions. So when you and I started working, I remember going, this guy's got some of the most fucking amazing artwork on your body. With the numbers and the letters on the leg and like, you've just had a certain parts, but your tattoos have evolved so much. Like I was just looking at a picture on, I don't know, whatever social media platform. And I got a really good, look at your back. You used to have like cherry blossoms back there, right?
Yeah. So my back is definitely, it's still under construction. Still got some work going on. But yeah, I had an existing smaller tattoo on my back, and it was a bird and a bunch of flowers kind of around it. And when I first started getting my back tattooed, I wanted to first integrate that tattoo into my overall back piece. And then when I started working on it, because of like the magnitude of how big of a tattoo it is and talking with my tattoo artist, I was just like, well, let's just do the whole entire thing. And I've still kept those flowers that were part of it, but I kind of covered over the bird. But yeah, it almost like surprises even me to look back and see photos of myself from like 8 years ago. 'Cause I'm just like, whoa, like that just the amount of bear skin in certain areas and you know, whatever. But especially in the last, like, well, I should say through the end of 2018 and all of 2019, I was going pretty hard with getting tattooed,
right,
at a nonstop pace. And unfortunately, with COVID, I've totally stopped at this point and not sure when I'll pick up, but yeah, on my back from the top of my shoulders to most of the way down my butt is pretty much solid. Still got to fill in some color and a few things and filling in my arms slowly a lot more. Still have some work on them. And then I'm jumbling around ideas for parts of the front of my torso and neck, but it's a process.
Holy hell. So what about the scarification though? Like, how is that going to be? Are you going to like accentuate that with a tattoo?
Yeah, that's part of the, I'm always kind of moving these like puzzles around in my head of like integrating tattoos and now with scars going in between it. So yeah, since I have so many scars across my torso, it's like, part of the dilemma, like I want to keep some of them more visible, but also I kind of want the tattoos to like kind of weave into them in ways if possible,
right?
And I've kind of sat down and drawn things out a bit, and I think once I talk to my one tattoo artist who I think is gonna probably do the majority of it, then he's like kind of a crazy artist as well, so he'll probably have some great ideas that I didn't think of. But that's like maybe if I'm lucky I can start that next year, but right now I just want to finish my back because I've just put so much work into my back. And
I mean, it's beautiful. It's
close. Thank you.
It's so like when I see it, because I would see it and I watched it over the years, you know, when you and I were still working with each other, and I would see, you know, a little bit added here and there. But then like recently I looked at it, I was like, that is, it's because it is, it's fucking this magnificent, like, butterfly.
It's moth. Like a gigantic moth. And then there's just like really big, poppies and what are they called? Hibiscus flowers.
Okay.
Kind of around it. But I feel like I always go into tattoos being like, all right, like this will take a while, but not that long. And then like a year, you're like, okay, I'm also getting through this.
That's my goal. I've never had one last over, I think, four and a half hours is the longest I've ever been under the needle. Like, I don't have any big pieces, and I've always wanted to be like, having sleeves, but I mean, you've seen my arms little by little, I've just collected things. And like, I don't know, like when you see people that have sleeves, they either have like you with this monster piece that takes over the entire thing, or there's a theme. And I'm like, I don't really have a theme. I just have things.
I know. I feel like I used to be I kind of have things, and then I've slowly just been like, I want coverage. and so I've been like working more into that, but it's just, because I feel like I got to a point where, you know, I wanted more balance and kind of cohesion, but it's just, it's like trying to do a gigantic, it's trying to like paint a wall with like a ballpoint pen, you know, you're like, I'm chipping away at it. It's just going real slow. So
how many hours do you think you've gotten your back already? Well, just on the new stuff, not even like what you had prior, like just to where you are right now with it.
I would say roughly maybe 60 hours.
Fuck.
Yeah. Because I'm usually going in, I usually will go, when I make appointments with my tattoo artist, Laura Taylor, it's 2 days in a row. So it's like, so I get a good amount done, but each day it's like 4 to 5 hours. But you know, then you're, by the end of day two, you're like, don't touch me. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even imagine that, dude. I can't, like I said, four and a half hours, and But my back is blank. Like I swore I was going to at some point in my life have this masterpiece on my back, and I'm a big dude, so there's a lot of room back there. But I just, when it comes down to the money that it would take to cover my back opposed to what I could do with that money, I'm like, I'm do something else right now.
Yeah, no, it's very, very valid reason. that's another reason kind of why I'm slowing down, but it's also just, I thought my back was like back skin, that's not that sensitive, but it's also full of the back of your ribs and your spine and your tailbone. Like there's a lot of bones back there that people don't realize.
And you're a fit motherfucker too, dude. It's not like you're basically skin stretched over muscle. So there's no like softening the blow on that.
Yeah. My butt was fine, but a lot of it was pretty bony.
So kind of segueing into what, you know, the photo I was looking at, you, when you're not making porn, you seem to be a lot of, outdoor stuff. Are you a big outdoors person? Is it the hiking? Is it camping? Is it like, tell me about it.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is definitely COVID for sure, because it's one of the few pleasures that hasn't been taken away from us. But, I've definitely always loved the outdoors a lot, and I'm grateful to live so close to so many beautiful places with, you know, just like an hour, 2 hours away from San Francisco. But, it's also like it's my reset. It's my time in a big way. It's like talking about being Owen Gray and being on camera and performing and just, you know, I kind of push, I make myself work constantly. I'm very much a workaholic, but being outdoors is like my reset button, where I'm like not thinking about Twitter, not thinking about work, and I'm just kind of just like getting some fresh air and being outside. And that's where I kind of recharge. And so, especially with this year, because so much of it was stuck indoors already, and I work by myself at home so much as it is, you know, it's like I could just sit at home for weeks working and be like, oh, this is great, I'm so productive and have a blast. But thankfully my wife and sometimes myself is like, okay, let's get out of here, let's get outside. And that's really just where I kind of regroup, because that allows me to give so much more and give more in my scenes and give more on camera, give more to, you know, the people that I engage with on OnlyFans and all that. So yeah, it's necessary for me.
Yeah. I completely feel it. The thing, and that's the one thing that I really dislike about being in Vegas, is that we have 3.5-4 months to where you don't want to go outside. Like it's 100 degrees for so like, and I tell people this and they're like, well, it cools off at night. Yeah. It drops from 115 to 100. Like there's days like, oh, sometimes it's then this summer we had one of those where it was like over a week that it never dropped below 100 degrees. Yeah. You can't camp. You don't, and there's no trees. There's not, I mean, and I, man, holy fuck, the shit that we used to do when we still lived in the Bay Area, because it was, like you said, it was everything. There was, and people, like being from Georgia, people like, oh, everything in California is brown. You think it's brown in California? Come to Vegas. So like, you know, and I miss that so much, because we don't have the opportunity to go out and do what we used to. Like, I used to go to a park when we were in Castro Valley. I'd go to a fucking park every weekend with my kid. Like Becky would take a week and she would go do the thing. And I would take the kid out every single weekend throughout the entire year, except, you know, it got a little chilly in the wintertime, but just put more layers on. But now it's all right, let's sit inside, because there's so much nature around. Like you leave Vegas proper, and like from where I'm at right now, within 10 minutes, I can be up in Red Rock to where there's hiking trails galore there. But there's no coverage, and in 100 fucking degrees, nobody wants to go do it. Yeah.
Brutal. So
that's the one thing I miss, because we kind of feel the same way. Like that's how we kind of recharge the batteries, is getting out and doing. But it's like I said, it sucks. We're in the desert. So
yeah. I feel that. I've broaden my, like, I've been driving more this year, which, I've been to like Joshua Tree, and I went up to Portland, and just to like get outside of the Bay Area. But it's definitely been, I've taken advantage of that quite a bit this year to just spend some time outdoors, because there's nothing, you know, it's, especially when you're stuck inside all the time.
Well, I'm like you too, though. It's like, I have the kind of, when people are like, well, you know, is it difficult for you because you're not seeing a lot of people? And I was like, I don't see a lot of people anyway. Like, I miss Christmas Disco. Like, I don't get to see him as much because, you know, the quarantine, because I used to spend, we always joke that we spent more time with each other than we spent with our wives. But besides seeing him, I didn't really see a lot of people. So it's been kind of, I've just been putting my head down and working. And it's that problem where, like you said, you sit there and you put so much work in that you have to have someone remind you in case you forget. It's like, hey, we should go outside. Like, remember, there's something besides this area right here that you're doing work in all the time.
Yeah. Same. Like, doing porn is obviously a lot of kind of my social time. You know, it's like, even though I'm working, if I'm shooting, then I'm like, oh, I got to like hang out with this person I really like. And I saw that person that I hadn't seen in, you know, like 6 months. And that's like, it's fun and engaging, because I usually hopefully get to work with people that I like. But yeah, like the first month or two, I was not really concerned with social, like, things I was missing. I was like, yeah, I'll see them eventually. Like, it'll be okay.
Right.
You know, and then eventually I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it's been like 4 months. It would be really nice if I could see some of my friends. Right.
But this is why, this is the way I've been connected. Like, my wife and I talked about it, and she was like, you know, at one point she was like, well, you're socializing. And I'm like, I'm not socializing. She's like, you're doing your podcast. You're doing shoots. You're talking with people. I was like, you can sit with me if you want. Yeah. And, but because she's the one, she's the big social butterfly who likes to go out and likes to be around people, where I'm like, do I have to go? Like, I'm very much happy. I'm content with being at home. And I, like I said, I enjoy people, but I think it's also, like you said, the socializing that you get through work. Like, you, when we're shooting full time, we see so many people so often that you don't really need any more interaction, because you go home and family's there and the wife's there and you're like, fuck, this is all I need.
Yeah. You know, you get kind of those fun moments, and thankfully it's, you know, tied into work, so it makes work often more enjoyable as well. But yeah, it's a balance. But it's been, you know, obviously it's such a, like, we're still kind of in this really uncertain time, so it's hard, because there's people, you know, that live in other places I'd love to see, but with the holidays coming up and family, it's obviously brings in another kind of tricky decisions of certain boundaries. But I'm still hopeful.
Yeah, I am too. We've actually talked about, because, you know, God forbid there's an emergency, because both of us, Becky and I, our parents are in their 70s. Luckily they're healthy and they listened and they're being smart and, you know, doing the things they've been told to do, or at least that we told them to do. We were like, God forbid if there was a situation, an emergency, like, we're not going to get on a fucking plane. So she, even though we're a family of three, she wanted a fucking minivan. So she's got this really nice minivan. So I was like, I've never driven across country. So, and at this point with me doing this, obviously we would have to pack up a lot for me to do a podcast, but if it was just a trip for a family situation, I wouldn't be doing podcasts anyway. But I was like, I can do the editing. I can do everything else from wherever I have a computer. So I was like, we technically could go anywhere at this point. At the same time, I'm like, I don't want to be staying in hotels. And I do know someone, Five Star was telling me that they did a cross country trip and they did like this camping Airbnb kind of thing.
Yeah, some of my friends did that and told me about it. I know, unfortunately, we're heading into kind of a cold time.
Right.
But yeah, my friends told me about Hip Camp and they loved it. They thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Stayed at a bunch of really cool properties. And yeah, if you're camping, you know, you're pretty dang safe. So.
Yeah. And they were saying, Five said that, you know, the whole way, like, they saw fewer people going across the country than they saw walking out in their neighborhood for 5 minutes to walk the dog. Like, they drove across country, and because of that thing and doing the camping, they saw less than they did in a 5 minute walk in fucking San Francisco, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But it also sounds amazing. Like, can you imagine crossing the country and running into less than 20 people or 30 people?
Yeah. I mean, sounds kind of amazing, but yeah, it'd be a trip.
So, Mr. Owen Gray, let me ask you this. What kind of music do you listen to?
I feel so like uncool and all. I don't know. Like, I feel like when I was younger, I was so much more engaged in like the bands I really liked and like following their albums and reading about them. And now I do like a little bit of that, like reminiscing, like, oh yeah, I haven't heard that band in a while. And I look them up, you know, on Spotify or something. But I feel like these days it's often, you know, just like, oh, I'm just going to throw on some like radio station that'll play things I kind of like. And so I often like don't even really know what I'm listening to. But I mean, going back to, I mean, I'm such a product of the 90s. Like, if you throw on like anything like alternative from the 90s, if you throw on like rap and hip hop from the 90s, like I'll probably really like it.
Okay.
but you know, I definitely get into like Nick Cave is forever one of my favorite musicians. I'm also definitely into a lot of more people like Philip Glass. I don't know if you Philip Glass, but
that doesn't sound familiar.
You know, just more like classical kind of orchestrated work.
Okay.
There's a few composers like Philip Glass, another Italian guy, Ludovico Einaudi, that I'm really into. And yeah, I can definitely get into some, I mean, I definitely like, you know, recently kind of being stuck inside. I actually, especially since it's been so smoky here, I bought myself a rowing machine to exercise inside.
Okay.
Since I can't even go outside, which has been one of the harder things here, but you know, I just thankfully with streaming music, I just was throwing on a bunch of old like punk stuff from when I was 16, 17, and was just having fun.
I have to imagine that would like, that's fuel. That's almost fuck yourself up fuel, because you're going to put on punk rock and then get on a rowing machine and be like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's like, yeah, you know, and it's just like fun to me. It's just like, it just kind of like gives me that fun energy, but especially like I definitely have a hard time exercising in a normal capacity, like a gym, but like I've ridden a bike, like commuting for 15 years. And so especially being stuck inside, I'm like, okay, this is like biking for my arms. And I can just stay in place and like kind of grind away. So it's going, I actually had never used a rowing machine before I got it. So thankfully I like it a lot, because
I guess they're not super big, but they definitely take up some space, don't they?
They're strange. They're very low and long and skinny. So it's like, kind of like if you have a pair of skis and you just lay them on the floor.
With a seat on them, right?
Yeah, with a seat on it. It's like, it's only like, you know, 18 inches tall, but most of it's even shorter than that. But thankfully, I have a garage where I'm at, so it can sit in the garage and is out of the way. But yeah, you know, it's just long and low, and you just grind away.
That's my problem. I need to, because my metabolism kind of hit the brakes right around 41-ish, 42. My metabolism was like, you know what? I'm done. We're finished with this. Like in my 20s, I made you look bulky. Like I was bones, man. I was like, I almost like my upper arms, I look like a crackhead. Like I go back and see these pictures of me, and I was like, How was I tiny. And then all of a sudden, yeah. And my friends back in LA were telling me, they're like, you're an asshole because you're so skinny and you're still wearing like size 32 jeans in the waist or whatever. And one of the dudes that was a little older than me, he's an old punk dude. And he was like, you just wait, motherfucker. He's like about 40, 45. He's like, it's going to stop. And I'm like, fuck you. You're just mad because you're getting fat. Guess who got fat?
People have been telling people, like, my whole childhood, people were telling me that. They're like, oh, just wait until you're an adult. They're like, and I'm like, dude, I'm waiting. I'm still, this is the heaviest I've ever weighed, which is like 150, 152 or something, if you can count that.
Right.
And I'm like, I mean, my wife makes fun of me because I'm constantly eating. And she's just like, are you even hungry? I'm like, no, but I like eating and it's fun, but it's like, and I'm, you know, between exercising and just trying to eat all the time, I'm like, dude, just give me like 5 pounds. That would be awesome.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, cool. I maybe 45, 50, maybe it'll slow down a little bit, but
maybe,
I can't complain. I'm active and I stretch. Like, personally, exercising is great. Stretching helps me feel like I'm not dying and getting really old. So I try to stretch a lot.
Yeah. Stretching is, I'm finding out, especially with the whole COVID thing. It's I'm slowly, very slowly easing into like doing yoga. One, cause I've had back issues since I was in my 20s, and a lot of it's from sitting at a desk or even when I worked in, like, it's just, I'm 6'4" and I've got the every tall person bad posture thing. So I constantly have to be like, you know, sit up straight. So the stretching, I'm kind of, that's my new thing, the stretching and the breathing, which is helping with all of the anxiety and all the shit because the stretching is definitely becoming a thing. Now, if I could just stop eating so much and work out, but I figure it'll come. And if I'm that, honestly, I told my wife, I was like, you know, if I hated it that much, what I saw in the mirror, I'd stop eating and sitting around drinking beer at night, but that hasn't happened. So clearly I'm not that upset with myself.
Yeah, you've always, I mean, from what I can tell, you've always been pretty good size. So, but I know what you mean. To me, it's like, it's kind of, I mean, people have always made fun of me for my body my whole life, but I'm at a point where it's like, I feel pretty decent about how I physically look. But to me, it's also just that, like, I don't, you know, like, I feel good. I feel like I'm decently strong. I feel limber. I don't like, like, I can be athletic and exercise, and to me, that's what's important, because, you know, I've definitely had injuries or something where I just physically, like, couldn't move a lot or, you know, really bad pulled muscles, and just my body and how I feel, I think, is a lot more important, really, than, like, whatever weight I may fluctuate eventually.
I'm just trying to, in my head, when you said that, I'm trying to figure out, like, what in the fuck, how could someone make fun of it? Is it out of envy because they're not as cut as you are?
Oh, no, I've just always been super, like, it's, you know, same as you. When I was, like, through my teenage years, I was even skinnier than I am now.
Right, okay.
And so people have just always made fun of being super skinny and lanky.
Right.
And that's, like, it's, like, so done by now. I'm like, cool. Like,
yeah, I've eased into the comfort level of who I am to a point that I'm like, I'm like, and you especially, because you're naked on camera all over the world now. So, I mean, if you're not comfortable at this point, and I've even thought it, because there was a point where I was like, all right, I have an OnlyFans page where I've got a backlog of all this BTS stuff that I would do, which luckily is there. But then I started thinking, shit, maybe I should do a little solo and get that whole daddy thing out there. And I was like, I'm going to have shorts pulled down and I'm going to have a shirt on. And I was like, nobody, if they want to see it, they're going to want to see it. And I was like, all right, I'm not confident enough to do that yet. So maybe.
I feel like you'd have the highest number of, like, porn girl subscribers of anything. You'd be like, finally, JP's getting naked.
Exactly. This motherfucker has teased us for over a decade and he's finally going to bring it out.
Yeah. But I mean, dude, that's what I'm always telling, like, people are often asking me for advice about, like, how to get big or how to, you know, how to get more followers or how to get more popular on Pornhub. And like, there's something for everybody. I mean, that I definitely, you know, I guess, like, just for me, I was always told that I'm not the norm. And so if you look at me now, you know, like, if you told me 8 years ago I'd be here, then I'd be like, they're like, really? I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait, me? It's like, if I can make it here, then I think people totally have potential. You know, I'm just working what I got, because I feel like your look, like, I can't grow a beard. I don't have, like, the daddy, like, older, mature male. I feel like I kind of have always had this like young boy look, even getting starting to get a little bit older. But I'm kind of like, well, people are still buying stuff, so
I was like, dude, it's working. But you know, it's always, I feel like the grass is always greener. Like, you know, I always wanted curly hair, and the beard thing. It's all white almost at this point. And Disco used to, every time I grow it out, it's hard to see, but like right where
where it connects. Yeah.
It doesn't connect and it's uniform. So I basically have like my thumb width on each side. And when I first said something about it, because you know, you've seen him, like he can yawn and grow in sideburns. Like this guy's got amazing facial hair. He made George Michael look like shit.
Yeah.
And, when I said something about I can't even grow sideburns, he's like, yeah, you can. He's like, just let that part grow. And I was like, what part? He seriously all these years thought that part I shaved. And I was like, why the fuck would I shave that? And he was like, I don't know. But he's like, I just assumed that you did. And I was like, no, it doesn't even connect, man.
Yeah, there's one gap. You're like, I just don't like that part of my facial.
I'm fuck just gonna shave that part and on both sides. So yeah, like I said, I think the grass is greener. I think it's always going to be that way. And it's finding a time to where when you can look in the mirror and you'd be like, you know what? I'm all right with this.
Yeah. I mean, it could be a lot worse. I'm healthy. I have a decently functioning body. So I really can't complain.
And you're fucking almost any woman that everyone else wants to at this point. So there's nothing wrong with that either. So you said that you like, 90s hip hop. Do you have somebody? Cause I'm that's the thing when you're saying this, I was like, how can you not be more? Cause I don't know, in my head, we've never talked about it of all the times we've been on set together. And I guess it's mainly cause I was playing it, but I assumed you were a big music person.
Oh, I always loved the music that you played on set and you always kind of played a variety, but it's like, I've always been super, I don't know why, shy about you'd be like, oh, get naked and like do this stupid thing on camera. I'd be like, great. But like talking about music, I'm like, oh, like I like a lot of stuff. Like I've kind of like dodged the question for so long. But I mean, yeah, going into the 90s, you know, just you know, NWA, Eazy-E, I definitely used to like, especially when I was younger, like totally into Tupac. There's so many other, Wu-Tang.
So you were East and West Coast then with your hip hop.
Yeah. But I think it definitely kind of mature. Like when I was like a kid and I was watching like MTV, it was probably like way more, West Coast, but definitely as I've gotten older, like the East Coast stuff and also just like I read what's his name, U-God. He wrote from Wu-Tang. He did like an autobiography that I read a couple of years ago. I just love I love the music, but I also just love learning about like the life and the people in it and the stories. I'm trying to think of like other. I feel like I'm looking up at my books. There's some other people who I've like read their books or listened to their podcasts, you know, like Ice Cube.
Ice Cube's definitely at the top of the list for me. There's a guy, he's Wu-Tang, and I can never remember because there's so many of them. He is super, super, like you listen to him, this guy's like hyper intelligent. He was on the Joe Rogan show recently, and it's killing me that I can't think of his name right now. But he's like very spiritual and he's written books and like just sit there and listening to him talk, it's just like holy fuck.
Oh, probably RZA.
Yes.
Yeah, because he's very like into like philosophy, and he actually wrote a whole book. I think it's about like the Wu-Tang philosophy.
Yeah.
I haven't read that one. I can't remember what it's called, but I was definitely curious. But yeah, like I watched the Wu-Tang show that was on, I think it was on Hulu or something. It was like a year ago. It was kind of like a fictional reenactment of like the early days of Wu-Tang.
Okay.
But RZA is also like, he was the main producer. So he's kind of, he's very high up in the Wu-Tang group,
right?
Of people, yeah.
So what about new stuff? Are you into any kind of new hip hop? I mean, have you been able, because I know as a hip hop fan, like with me, it was hard to get past that mumble shit, but now the mumble shit's kind of people are, it's been played out, I think. Is there anybody that you're listening to or that you like now?
I feel like I just don't, I'm like not, maybe part of me just hasn't given enough of it a chance. It's, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like maybe I might like some of it, but I feel like I just haven't given enough of it a chance, because I feel like often when songs kind of blow up in their popularity and I see everybody talking about it, and I'm like, and then like 6 months later, somebody be like, you haven't heard that song, and they'll play it for me, and I'll be like, yeah, like
give or take. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm not jumping on it, but it's fine. Yeah. There's probably good stuff out there that I'm just not familiar with.
You just have to look for it. You have to, like, I gave up on it for a long time, and I was that old man guy who was like you said, I'm just going to go back and listen to fucking Tupac and Ice Cube and Nas, and I'm just going to go listen to good old shit.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I love music too much to get stuck and not have new music. Cause I listen to, when I say everything, I mean everything.
Yeah.
And, I started listening to it, and it took a long time, and you have to kind of weed through it, just like with any genre, I think. And I started finding ones that I was like, all right, this is sticking out to me. That's sticking out to me. And surprisingly, somebody, if you like the 90s hip hop, somebody you might actually like, that's fucking, I think she's a badass, and she samples old school fucking hip hop, is Megan Thee Stallion.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
She did that thing with Cardi B, which I'm like, Cardi B is who she is, and you know, I got respect for her because she blew up. I don't think that she's got as, and people are probably gonna go crazy when I say this, I don't think she's got as much talent as she believes she has. But this Megan Thee Stallion, this fucking woman, holy, like, she starts rhyming and you're like, oh shit, like, you're like, I renewed faith, like, I believe in hip-hop again, because she is, I think she's good. So
yeah, I heard her a little bit on, I watched the what is it called?
There's Saturday Night Live?
No, there's a show called Legendary, and it's like all about voguing and balls. I don't know if you are familiar with voguing and balls. Mm-hmm. But she was like one of the judges on that show, and I think she gave a performance at one point. And so I'm a little familiar.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm kind of like, I often like the personalities or people sometimes more than like the music that they create. You know, I like, I've totally seen a lot of things of Cardi on Twitter, that things she says or posts that I think are hilarious, and I love kind of what she's doing, but I'm like not even that familiar with her music. I'm like, yeah, you're cool, like.
Yeah. But I feel that way about her too, like, I think she's funny. I saw her, I got like, because I've heard her name and I've seen her, and I'm like, man, whatever. And I wasn't fond really of her music, and then there was a hip hop talent contest, and I can't remember what, I've referenced it a couple times on this podcast, but she was one of the judges, and it was like her, the dude from Atlanta, T.I., and then Chance the Rapper, and then they had to go back to the cities that they came from and pick up the best local talent, bring them back, and so it was this cool concept.
That's cool.
And yeah. Cardi B, I laughed my ass off. She is funny as fuck.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm like, I don't really care for her music as much, but like as a person, and like you said, like her, like the stuff that she does on social media, I think she's amazing. I think she's funny. I'm just like, eh, when it comes to the music.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the case with kind of a lot of music. It's such a different world now, because now it's like the image and name and what they do publicly kind of overshadows a lot of people's music. Like I remember joking a few years ago about, like, I feel like once a year, like some rapper would be like, some, you know, new young rapper would be like going to jail or some scandal happened or something. And I'm like, this is kind of how they get popular now. Like, I don't even know their music, but it's like, it's like something happens legally or on social media and their name blows up, but it, like, I feel like their music kind of becomes very an afterthought.
Right. Yeah. Their social presence is more, their reputation is more than their music is. We're used to, there was the music and then you had to have the, like with Tupac and Biggie, you had to have the reputation that came with it, but the music came first. Now it's all this clowning each other and all this other bullshit to where it's like, it's more about the spectacle and less about the actual fucking music.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, they have like music videos and you buy the CD and they have like the album art and kind of like, you get these little tastes, but you wouldn't like hear, like, you rarely heard like interviews and stuff with your favorite artists unless you're lucky to catch it on TV or something.
Yeah. Before there were DVRs. You just happened to be watching the right station at the right time. You're like, oh my God, so-and-so's on.
Yeah. There was no YouTube. It was just like, you're like, oh, I caught this like 5-minute interview with this person I like.
So, all right, Owen, let me ask you this. Cause we're kind of getting close to time. And by no means am I rushing, we can go forever, but what's coming next? What can we look forward to that's coming from Owen Gray? Do we got anything like new that we should be looking out for?
Yeah. So I have this kind of, I don't know if you want to call it like ethos, but like I feel very hesitant talking about things I'm going to do rather than talking about what I'm doing or like,
right.
And to not be like, I'm, you know, talking about all the things I'm going to do. I'm rather, I'd rather just have it and be like, check out this thing I created that I'm really happy and proud about.
Perfect.
But with that being said, like, I'm very excited to, like, I've started a little bit with getting to hire other performers and put them in scenes where I'm just behind the camera, which I really love that opportunity to do that. I'm hoping that with some time, the people that, you know, follow me enjoy watching them. It's a little bit of a tricky switch because I feel like there's still a lot of people that obviously watch what I'm producing for me.
Right.
But, I definitely am very excited to kind of showcase other performers and to really start moving into a direction where I'm just showing a broader representation of sexuality and different people. It's kind of what I say. So that's creeping into the end of this year. And definitely once we get into next year, I'm like, as long as production goes smoothly and things are okay in the industry, that I'm really excited to get behind the camera a little bit more. And I'm still going to be performing and still be putting out plenty of scenes on my own. But, you know, I think there's so many great performers out there, so many performers that are maybe into things that I don't always do myself. And you know, I have my mode of sex that I portray, and right. I think there's so much more out there to kind of show and celebrate. So I'm hoping that I feel like there's a weird shift in who is performing for other people now,
right?
Because we're in this new era where like I feel as though a lot of performers were like doing fine with their own content. And then not being able to shoot kind of just showed people that like, no, like you can get by and you can be fine without shooting for other companies.
Yep.
And some people are like moving out of LA or they're just like, oh, I don't shoot for other people or I only shoot trade now, like in this context. And you know, there's so many great performers. So it's kind of this like, if things go how I'm hoping, then I'll be able to hire some different performers and create something that I didn't get to do before. So we'll see.
That sounds awesome. Is it are you going to stay with the same brand, the Deep Lush, or are you going to
I wanted something totally kind of ambiguous and not like, that's kind of why I didn't just do like owengray.com, because right. I didn't really want it to be just about me. And I wanted it to just encompass more people, more things. But yeah, I've definitely had considerations about the potential of having other brands, but I think because of how I'm kind of talking around what I want to do without telling you straight on, which is why maybe this sounds a little weird, but
no, I get it.
Yeah. I'm trying to, I want to bring more people into kind of what I'm doing, and hopefully I can do that, but I don't really see myself kind of opening up a different brand anytime soon.
Okay. That makes sense. How do you feel about the way the shift has gone with this industry? Because when you first got into it, it was still very much big companies, big studios running it and making the calls and making the decisions. Whereas now there's been a serious shift in power. And I talked to a lot of people about this, that it's different. You now have, as a performer, there's more control over who you work with, when you work, how you work, the scenes you do, and how your brand is portrayed. Like, there's so much more power with the performer, whereas before it was the performer was the commodity. I feel like now that the big studios are the commodity and the performers are the one with the power.
I'm so happy. I mean, like, happy is an understatement. Like, I'm so grateful that performers have options now, because for so long there was no options, and that it really changed the representation of like how performers could represent themselves, and it totally changed like how companies choose to represent performers, because often, you know, companies are like, I have, you know, I'm looking for young teen white girl to play stepdaughter, and this is what you're going to be. And girls are like, well, okay, like, I'd like to work, you know, or, you know,
right.
All the same stories with like black male performers, you know, like, you want to be thug number two. So now it's like performers can be like, well, I don't want to work for that site, or I don't want to be represented in that way, so I'm just not going to shoot for that company. And also, it's created so much more opportunities for, I mean, a lot of people don't, like you're saying, like, people are familiar kind of with Owen Gray now and the image that I've created. But right. Like, for the first few years that I was performing, I mean, even most other performers were just like, they're like, whoa, that's cool that you got to shoot for this company. But like, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't think like that director or that director or that company would want to shoot you because of the way you look. Like,
right.
I had a lot of people tell me like, you're not going to go very far in porn because of the way you look.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was kind of like, okay, well, like, I just really want to get a few more opportunities and a few more chances. And, but that was a big push for me to start producing my own content early on, but there was just so few outlets for me to actually monetize that. It was like clips for sale.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
you know, and now there's so many options. So it's like, I have like a tiny bit of bittersweetness, but in a good way of like, there's certain performers that I maybe have shot with in the past that I'd be like, oh, I'd love to hire them again. But, you know, they're just like, oh, I'm just doing my own thing. But I'm just like, oh, I'm so happy for you, because right. It's the ultimate freedom. And that's, you know, it's like you talked about working for your old boss and like him micromanaging what you do. And I always felt that way, especially even just in my vanilla jobs in the past, of like, I am busting my ass, like doing 10 jobs, trying to do something for somebody else's dream and somebody else's product and right. financial benefit. And now I'm like, yeah, I'm going to work my ass off, but it's for me.
You get to reap the rewards.
Yeah, I get to reap the rewards. I can represent myself the way that I want to, and all other performers can do the same thing. So it's really fascinating to watch, because I feel like there's still like tons of new people coming into the industry, but like a lot of I'm expecting a lot of like the, you know, whatever you want to call them,
the more established,
the really popular, especially the girls, you know, they're just like, I'm just going to have sex with my boyfriend and like go to some tropical island. And I'm like, okay, well, good for you. Have fun. But, you know, but even, man, like, even like I was so happy to be able to hire other male performers to be in scenes because I was really happy to like get behind the camera or be able to shoot boy girl scenes. But now it's also Brazzers that's contracting, like, because I feel like the male talent pool is like there's like a lot of newer people and then like the older generation that's been around for a while, that at least the ones that I know are like they're getting contracted or they're just doing their own thing or they're moving into different positions. And so it's like, oh my God,
a slim pickings, man. It's always been slim because of what the content that I shoot, but even in the main industry, like there was however many, you know, male performers out there that were doing the thing, but then there were the ones that were the most reputable, the ones that were going to show up, the ones that, you know, were solid performers that always came in and had their, you know, their shit together and they popped when you told them to pop. And, you know, there was the dependability and they still, even though you had more, but now it's like, it's just fewer and fewer and fewer. Yeah. And like you said, the ones that have the reputation, you know, Mind Geeks, like gimme. And they're pulling them in. But I've also, talking to certain people, I'm finding out that these male performers are like, you know, it's really cool to have a contract. And it's really nice because I'm contracted with a company who at this point is kind of be the one guarantee because they own almost everything, including Pornhub.
Yeah.
But they're bored because you can only go so many times before it starts to get not fun. And that was the biggest problem I think that I have with companies like them, with this industry, and kind of circling back to the OnlyFans thing is that you've got these massive companies, these conglomerates that bought up so much stuff that they have these people who sit in a room and write, like people that have never performed, that have now, they dictate what our industry is supposed to be, with the guy going, oh, because he keeps, you know, it's
scripted. It's like just very scripted sex.
And it's just regurgitating the same shit. And I worked with them. I produced for them for a while. And it's like there's nothing there. And it always bugged me. I'm like, how did these people who don't even have never been on a set get to dictate the brother, sister step and all the other crap? Well,
I mean, I assume it's just algorithms. Like they're analyzing data and they're really like, well, this formula works. So let's just try to hit that formula over and over and over.
Right.
And then it's like, you just keep doing the same thing and you can't make that magic happen like on command. It's not how sex works.
Right. Like if you tried to recreate, like when you said small hands, accidentally put a knee on Kristen's, if you tried to recreate that in every shoot, people are going to be like, all right, this is stupid.
Yeah.
They're like,
okay.
Yeah. What we saw and how it was handled and everything that was organic at that exact moment is what made it. And then trying to recreate it, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. And that's the thing that gets me. But that's also what I love about having the OnlyFans and the mini vids. And there's so much more than, and there's nothing wrong with Clips for Sale, everybody. Clips for Sale is great too. But there's so many more outlets for performers that which thank God I can still consider myself a performer, even though I'm not like what you guys are doing. But we get to now change the narrative. We get to take it back because you have the bigger names, the Owen Grays and like the Cherie DeVilles, who are like, I'm not going to shoot for anyone because I don't have to. I don't want to. And now they can, and anyone, you know, new coming in, that's like, I'm going to start my own site instead of doing this. And like, people are getting to the point where they realize that the power is in the performer and they're slowly pulling that power back. So the agents are losing the power. The big studios are losing the power. And it's going to be the performers who are saying, this is the way it's going to be, period. Or I'm not going to do it. And if you want it bad enough, I mean, no one in Hollywood tells Tom Hanks how he's going to do it. You know what I'm saying? And I think and that's somewhere it got twisted in our industry. And I think it's finding its way again.
Yeah. Cause that's always, especially even with the agents as well. It's like the agents work for the girls, but they're totally dictating what they can and can't do.
Right.
And it's like, why are you like, it's just, and that's why like that self-representation of a performer is just being able to like, I like, this is me and I want to be able to portray myself in this way on camera. And I don't want to have all those decisions made for me. So it's really, I think it's going to really change the way the companies produce, but also like, I think it's going to change the type of of porn that's produced, because people are just going to make things that are, they're not following data of like what sales are good. They're just like, I like doing this,
right?
You know? And that's why I think some things that really didn't get enough attention in the past are now like blowing up because people are finally making content for it.
Right. I agree with that 100%. And I think it really comes from passion. Like if it's something that you, like when I talked to the CEO, you know, she's brought it up a couple of times. She's like, well, you know, you do the Hogtied and the device. Are you bored? Like, is there something else you want to do? I was like, the reason I can still produce at the level that I am is because I'm passionate about it. I still very much look forward to it. I still think about it. I mean, it's a funny side story is my birthday was recently and my kid was like, my mother-in-law bought me, because I love doing barbecue at home, like smoking meats. And mm-hmm. I had on my wish list some of those like barbecue mops. Then it's just a little handle with a little mop that's got tails about this long. Mm-hmm. And because I have rope everywhere, because that's who I am. And he saw it and he was like, oh, Daddy, don't you have enough rope? I mean, how much more rope do you need? Did you ask for more rope for your birthday? And I was like, this is mops. And he has no idea what the rope's for, but he's like, he sees it all the time. And he's like, why is there, you have so much rope. Why do you need all this rope? And I was like, because I like to keep things from sliding around. But it does. There's this passion that I think that as long as someone has that passion and has the genuine desire to make anything from consensual, hot, hardcore BDSM to consensual, super passionate, real sex experiences like you do, like all of the, as long as someone has the passion to do it and then put the, and have the integrity to do it as well as they possibly can, I think they're always going to thrive, because it's people see it. I think the days of the, you know, like in my industry where you had to be like, oh, I'm so scared. Oh, where's the monster? Oh, he's going to get me. The girls now come up and they smile and they grind and you can look at them and like, wow, they're really into it. And people love it. And the first time that they fake it, the members are like, I didn't like the way she was acting. And they call it. And I feel like it's the same way with you. Like if a girl acted out of what they were used to seeing, the genuine reactions on your site, I think it would be the same thing. People are like,
I totally agree with most of that. It is an interesting, it's like one thing about just representing sex in any way that I find really fascinating is like, how you're talking about like that for BDSM and what you're doing, I find like spot on, because it's like, yeah, you don't have to act like afraid that this like bad thing is going to happen to you. Like you can show people like BDSM, people are going to have fun.
Right.
And yes, it can get extreme, but people are still having fun. And it's like, with my own stuff, I definitely think that's true the majority of the time. But it's like, I feel as though because of the way that I shoot, it's like I've reduced the amount of ingredients in what I'm making. And so sometimes I think, you know, there's kind of just this assumed representation of sex and what good sex is and pleasurable. And so there's totally times, which I'm sure happens maybe in some of your scenes as well, where it's like, you know, you can shoot a scene and be like, that was so hot. Like that, you know, like we had a really great connection but maybe the person like was kind of quiet, or maybe they didn't like express in the same way that maybe other people are like really loud. And so people can like, viewers can watch that and be like, oh, it didn't really seem like they were into it.
Yeah.
and so you kind of have this balance of like, you know, sometimes I'll shoot with somebody that is like nonstop dirty talk, just like the whole time, super dirty and like super animated. And people are like, whoa, that felt so fake. But then if like they're too quiet, then it's like the other spectrum. So it's just,
yeah.
But it's like, I kind of still want to show all of that, because I like, you don't have to act like one way if you're enjoying sex. And I think that there's something pleasurable in all of that, but it's this like assumed idea of like what should be expected when sex is hot. So
yeah, and I think it's good, and I think that we've gotten to a I wish I could say we were to a good point with representation of sex, but you either have there's always going to be a downside. There's always going to be, you know, people or groups of people that are like, fuck that, and they ruin this. And it's like, you know, you got that dude fucking Terry Crews who's like, fuck porn. And it's like, you know what, just because you can't control your addiction, big boy.
Yeah.
And it's like people that come after, it's like, you know, maybe you should look a little more at you and a little less at what you're blaming it on. Like, you need to, there needs to be self-awareness and self, you know, like you have to take some responsibility for it. But I feel like we're getting closer than we used to be. Like when I first started this was still very much, you know, we don't like all the models. I was just talking to somebody the other day, like when you went to an agency, there was no BDSM, there was no bondage, there wasn't even fetish. You just looked for a hot girl that looked like she did more than just vanilla sex. And you're like, all right, I'm going to try this. Like, you know how we found out about Phoenix Marie? We just asked. There was no bondage on there, and she should fuck it. I'll show up and come do it. Like all of these old school girls, these big names that were not big names when I started that are now like mega stars.
Yeah.
We just, back in the day, we just asked. And, you know, so it's gotten to a point where it's acceptable. And, you know, back to what we were talking about, you know, earlier is fucking TikTok. The, what is it called? The for you or something. Like, it's like when you go on, you have like your, who you're following and then what they think you like. And there was somebody who had a feature thing going with you and I on there. Yeah. And it's not this secretive hiding dark back corner of some store thing. Like, it's very much out in the open. I mean, for fuck's sakes, that stupid ass 50 Shades of Shit that came out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole nother area.
Yeah. So, but I do think that we're getting to a point where it's becoming, I think people are becoming more liberated and seeing by watching your stuff and by watching like even some of my stuff that it's okay to want it a certain way. It's okay to laugh during sex. It's okay to giggle during this. It's okay to be super turned on when some guy's torturing the shit. I think people are, and it's liberating for people that are like, oh fuck, okay, I can do this and that's okay.
Yeah. It's been a really fascinating experience over the years to watch kind of what people follow me in porn and why they're engaged. And over the years, I've definitely been aware of like watching comments and especially on Pornhub, I've been like, oh, like it's really nice to see how many women, like I can tell comment or are engaged in watching my videos. But especially since I started my OnlyFans, it's like a, probably 90% of the people that follow me on OnlyFans are women.
Most of your OnlyFans, sorry to interrupt you, most of your OnlyFans is soloing, right?
Most of it's, yeah, most of it. I have a little bit of like BTS sex stuff and a little bit of phone stuff, but it's mostly just solo stuff.
Okay.
But it just makes me happy to like see women kind of publicly embracing that side of their sexuality as well. Like, yes, I watch porn. Yes, I like, you know, dirty stuff and BDSM and all this stuff, and not kind of be hiding behind, you know, they totally have that option of hiding behind a computer screen like anybody does. But a lot of them are very public and very open about the way they feel, which I think is wonderful. And it's also just like, and it's the type of sex too, because there's so much, like, you know, I'm sure that you remember even 5-6 years ago, just how much I feel like there was kind of just this buzz of like feminist porn and porn for women and all that stuff. And like, I feel like that idea has kind of been like broken apart a lot, because people are like, obviously women watch a lot of different types of porn. They don't just watch like cute, beautiful stuff, but like, it kind of like cracks me up in a sweet way. But it's like, being on my OnlyFans, I just want people to feel comfortable and like happy that they have found something sexually that appeals to them, and so that they're accepted and they don't feel bad about it.
Right.
So I always just try to have like this really warm communication with the people on there. But I always kind of laugh, because I'm just like, hey, like, what can I do? And, you know, often it's women being like, I just want you to step on my neck and like rail me and like do all the, and I was like, sure, I can make a video like that, you know, but it's, you know, and it kind of makes me happy, because it's like, it just shows this level of people becoming more uninhibited with sharing their sexual desires,
which is super hot.
Yeah, it's super hot, and it's like so freeing from being, you know, from being confined to like only going along with whatever your partner thinks. Or, you know, so many people just ask me like, how do I engage in this type of sex with my partner? And it's largely because they just don't have the vocabulary to talk about it, or they're too afraid to. And so kind of like highlighting and showing that more, it's just, you know, like, I love when people are like, oh, I watched your porn with like my partner, and we both like, it helped us talk about sex and what we want. Like,
that's awesome.
That's like my goal. Yeah. You know, like just talk about sex with your partner. Like that, you'll go so far just by opening up that dialogue.
Because most people don't, and I think we're a lot further along than we were when I started in this industry, but people all the time, I get the same thing. Like, that's one of the bigger things. It's like, you know, how do you talk to your partner about doing the things that I do? And I'm like, well, you got to open your mouth. Like, you have to start. Obviously, I'm not a shit about it, but I'm like, have you even told them that you like it? And they're like, well, I don't know how to tell them. Well, you just say, hey, you want to watch this video with me? I think this is kind of hot. And they're either going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Or, oh my God, I love the same thing. Yeah. It doesn't really do anything for me, but if you like it, I'm willing to try it. But yeah. I tell everybody, you know, you have to start. And the fact that there is communication and people are starting to realize that you can turn the lights on. You don't have to be under the covers, and it doesn't have to be missionary. I mean, it's okay for a dude to get a blowjob and get his ass fingered at the same time if that's what he likes. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, is trying to pull any label off of this. Sex is sex, whether it's extreme BDSM, whether it's anything or everything. As long as I say this, as long as it's legal and it's consensual, have fun, do it and talk about it and ask, hey, how would you like me if I stuck my finger up your ass while I was blowing you, or vice versa, if I was going down, or, you know, ask. And that's the only way you're going to find out.
Yeah, I get so many questions about non-monogamy and like wanting to explore being non-monogamous, but people are terrified to talk to their partner about it because they're like, well, if I say something like that, they're going to think I'm not happy, or I don't want to be with them, or this and that. And I often encourage them, like, even if, depending on whatever your feelings are, like, talk to your, like, start in small ways to talk to your partner, almost as if you are open without open. Like, even if you're just watching a PG-13 movie and you see a hot sex scene and you're just like, you're like, oh, like, that's a hot sex scene, or like, oh, I find that actor attractive, or oh, like, you know, even if they're watching 50 Shades of Grey and they're like, ooh, like, maybe we could explore something like that. Like, it's just opening it up. It's just opening up to your partner about what you desire and what excites you, and just about you. Because so many people, they want connection, and they pretend they're not attracted to anybody else in the world. They pretend that they don't have any other desires, and they're just happy with whatever sex they're having. But just like starting baby steps of just like, just talk to your partner as though like you don't have to act on these things. You don't have to like be like, oh, I want to go fuck that actor. But you can just be like, oh, like, that sex scene in that TV show was really hot.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that just is like, it drops hints to be like, I'm like, oh, these are things that I'm into. Maybe we can integrate that into our existing relationship and still be totally monogamous, but explore. That's all that's going to do is bring you closer together with your partner, you know,
because you share it together. And that's the thing. It's like, this is the most intimate thing that you can do, is sex with someone else. And if it's that intimate, then you should be. I mean, it's always amazed me. And I mean, I was that way when I was younger too. It's like, you know, but it's just sex. Like, I don't want, like you said, I don't want to scare them, or I don't want to freak them out, or I don't want to do this, but you're doing the most intimate thing two people can do, period. Yeah. Not to mention that we are the only species, as far as I know. I know there's that weird story about doves, but we are the only species on the planet that even practices monogamy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, and it's so, it's, and that, I don't get
yeah,
it.
It's not typical, but you know, I would assume we could probably thank the church for a lot of that and a lot of other things we do.
Yeah. Well, that's me doing my part, calling myself the Pope. Fuck that place. But you know, at the same time, there's the, it's, I don't know. It's, It must be. It has to be the church, because there's so much shame that comes with people's sexuality. I think that's where most homophobia comes from, is shame that comes from religion.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, that would be my advice. It's okay. It's talk about it and be happy about it and celebrate it, rather than think you have to turn off the lights and get under the covers and bury your head and don't look at each other.
Yeah.
It's okay. Joke, fart, queef, do it. Yeah. Well, not on purpose with the farting, unless you're really into it, I guess.
Unless you're really intimate.
Yeah. That's your thing. And, you know, everybody has their thing. Like I said, as long as it's consensual, fucking have fun with it. So, Mr. Owen Gray, this has been fucking awesome.
Yeah, been really great to catch up. And I haven't done anything like this in a really long time. So you're like the most comfortable, like ideal person to
thank you.
Do another interview with. Yeah,
that's awesome. All right, I'm going to wrap this up real quick. Hold on a second. Don't hang up on me. I'm just going to do a send off real quick. Real quick. This is something I keep forgetting to do. Tell everybody how they can find you. Like, plug all your social media, everything.
So my Twitter is very Owen Gray, G-R-A-Y. And my where you'll find tons of updates and links there. My website is deeplush.com. And you can look me up very easily on OnlyFans, just onlyfans.com/Owen Gray, where you'll find way more like real life, personal, solo content, as well as I post a lot of just Q&A videos and kind of getting to know me stuff there.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think that's it. I don't do it as often as I used to. So I'm going through the checklist real quick in my head.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's the same thing since I just started shooting. I'm like, what am I supposed to do again?
Exactly. All right. Hold tight real quick. All right, everybody. This is Mr. Owen Gray. Until next time. Thank you, everybody.